Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have a maybe interesting but maybe not upbeat show. I'll tell you about it in a second, but this is going to deal with the spiritual nature of these events that I'm going to be talking about, and the metaphysical, as well as some science and other things. But we'll be talking about the coming political and nuclear crises that may occur. Now, that doesn't mean that they're absolutely going to occur, but assuming that the worst might happen, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. I'm not going to be talking about it in just a negative way. I'm going to hopefully giving some advice, information that may be helpful, and things that everybody can proactively do before, maybe to avert such a crisis, and after, to lessen the effects of that crisis. So this is tonight's show, The Coming Political and Nuclear Crises. I didn't put the word spiritual or anything in there because it would confuse people, thinking, well, is it spiritual to have a political and nuclear crisis? So I didn't do that. But we are going to be talking about that in these terms. Okay. So let me just say a few things. And the first is that for those of you who may not be listening to the news all that often, 2 days ago, Leon Panetta, who is the present Secretary of Defense, he used to work as an advisor and I think the assistant, White House assistant to Clinton a long time ago. Anyway, from his viewpoint, he decided that he was going to make an announcement, and he did. As part of some other things he was talking about, he stated that the state of Israel was going to most likely attack the state of Iran in either April, May, or June of this year. Now, he said so with the further explanation that this is a necessity because after some time in June, a certain location in a mountain range in Iran will be fully available to move most of their facilities for nuclear development, specifically the nuclear kind of development that could make an atomic or nuclear bomb, underground, to the point that even the bunker-busting bombs that the Israelis most likely have from us would not, from the United States, would not reach the facility. So it's either attack in these 3 months or forget it. The problem I see with 2 days ago, now there's more to this, but the problem I see with him making such an announcement, and I don't believe he made the announcement in a closet. I think he had the approval of the administration, the Obama administration, with President Obama giving his blessing, because it's too big of a thing to reveal by usually a defense secretary, well, going in some covert way against the president. That's just my thought about it. I'm not saying that it's definitely true, but I think that is the case. So here is the deal. I think that it will most likely severely harm the military defenses of Israel and could lead to a more, we'll say, complicated and even severe war than even if they did what the defense secretary said. Interestingly, after I heard this 2 days ago, I said, well, if I was Israel, I'd go in and attack them in March. You know, what the heck? Because now they've been alerted that they're going to probably attack in April, May, or June, move up the schedule. So today, which is another day later, the same defense secretary, Leon Panetta, said, well, now he thinks it's even more likely they're going to attack in March. Oh, what a jewel of a guy. All right. So that kind of took care of, threw that whole idea out the window, because I'm not saying that the Iranians are not smart enough to think about that, but I'm just saying that if you're supposedly an ally of a nation, You don't give away their strategic plans to their enemies. It usually is not considered helpful. Okay. So, where does that leave all of us? Well, it leaves us where I predicted this was going to happen for the last 5 years. Yes, 5 years. Now, I don't want to pat myself on the back about this. I want to say, damn, I was right. Because I want to be wrong. I want to still be wrong about this. I want to be wrong till the day it happens and then the day after and all this other stuff. Because this is a terrible consequence, and yes, we're going to talk about some of the consequences as well. And it is coming because, and this now we're going to talk about my opinion of what's going on here. Iran is an evilly run country. The whole country itself is not evil. There are many good people in Iran that are not evil. But the mullahs and the Ahmadinejad and the crazy people there that are running the place are evil. Now, why do I say that? What is the definition of evil? Evil means they have an indifference for the life of others. And in certain circumstances, they would prefer to end the life of others if they can't control that life in the ways they wish to. And how do I know that that's what they're doing? Because they announce it. They say that they're going to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. And why is that? Well, that's a good question. Somehow they think it's part of their religion. And there is a segment of Shiite Muslims who believe that there's going to be a coming of, like, a great being, not Christ, because they don't believe in Christ as a great being, or as a godlike being. And they think that this being is going to come, and it's going to be the 12th great being, which is going to end the contradiction in religions. And only their religion, the Shiite version of Islam, will survive. And that's it. And they're going to have caravans and all these cities and other things will line together under their religion. And the ones that don't will be destroyed. This is the big deal. They're going to be destroyed. And Israel, because they're so, I guess, Jewish, makes sense, will be one of the first to go as a country because it is, like Iran, an openly religious country, but it is, unlike Iran, religiously very tolerant and does not espouse to kill anybody that I know of as a part of their religion. And so this is the deal. This is what's going on. Now, what I'm explaining to you is a little simplistic. It's more complicated. I'm not an expert on their type of Islamic belief, but I speak as a layman, somewhat informed. And so they've got this whole idea that some of them believe that they're going to wipe out Israel because they are going to be the sword of this 12th Imam dude, who Ahmadinejad, I thinks he is. He never said exactly that, but I think he thinks he's the guy. But even if he doesn't believe it, he believes this guy's coming. And so that's the prophecy, the belief of these particular Muslim people. Now, of course, the worst kind of fanaticism is a kind that is based upon untested, that you can't test, belief structure where there is no rational balance to people's behavior because they're fanatic from a standpoint that it isn't even based upon greed necessarily or some other kind of material thing. It has behind it, no checks or balances. So you end up with these fanatical ideas that, if acted upon, will bring about terrible, terrible consequences. Now, how are they going to wipe Israel off the map? Well, their plan is, they've said it, so I'm going to tell it to you, because this is a part I don't have to hide. You know, my beliefs about it is not belief, it is the truth, it's whatever they said, you know. And what they said is that they're going to develop weaponry to counter the forces of Israel. But they didn't say nuclear weaponry. They keep that word out. And then they pretend that they're making weapons-grade uranium and plutonium, eventually plutonium, right now I think it's just uranium, that will be used for peaceful purposes because they have such a great need for nuclear power plants, which cost 1,000 times more than an oil-based power plant, of which they have like 10-15% of all the world's oil. That make sense to you? Well, maybe it isn't economically a good thing, and maybe it isn't even environmentally a good thing. But, you know, one way or another, because they think that, you know, maybe they're more in favor of nuclear power than oil power or whatever. One type of environmental issue versus another, you know. But regardless, they have a this ridiculous idea as their excuse for making huge amounts of weapons-grade uranium, which, by the way, generally speaking, is of little or no use in a nuclear power plant. Now, why is that true? Well, unless you're running all out, you don't want to have really high refined rates of uranium because you can have runaway reaction more easily. So you could have a little, maybe, but you have a real lot. You got yourself a potential bomb whenever something goes wrong much more easily than you would with a medium-grade, mostly supported reactor. You use some weapons grade to get things started, but it's not the main amount of fuel that is. So the crazy thing about this is that most of what they're saying it's totally nonsense. But they're making this excuse so that other people can buy into it who don't want to be involved because they're afraid of this political situation. And they don't want to make enemies out of Iran because they may trade with them or they may, you know, they may sell Iran a lot of things, including nuclear reactor kinds of stuff, or stuff to make weapons-grade nuclear energy. So, this is the problem. Iran is creating a bunch of nonsense to cover up the fact, which is not a very good cover-up, that they're making nuclear, on the path to making nuclear weapons. And they're not even hiding the fact that they're going to have missiles that can hit the United States within 2 years, and Israel within 6 months. So, this being the case, okay, then why would the administration of the United States be telegraphing, be broadcasting, literally, what the Israelis may do about this very violent threat to their existence? We already know, and let's go back in history, that ever since the Israelis, before they were Israelis, when they were Jews, alone, were, and I'm speaking because there's people in Israel that are not Jewish, you should know that about a third of the country is not Jewish, but the Jews that came to Israel, before they came there, most of them in some way or another were affected by the Holocaust in Germany, Poland, etc., promoted by Nazi Germany. Oh, by the way, of course, Iran said that that never happened. But the present-day Iran says that never happened. But the important thing to realize here is that they were affected by this in a way that is almost in their genes. It's not really, I'm just saying it in a loose way, that it's socially inculcated so strong that the majority of Jews were killed. And from approximately 1939 until 1945, with a few also being killed from 1934 on, actually. But the majority, the vast majority, were in that range. Okay, so in a six-year period, 6 million Jews, a million a year if you averaged, were killed. And the ones that weren't killed suffered immensely in one way or another. Even if they were just hiding. Okay. So, with this idea, they have a knee-jerk response when someone says, we're going to eliminate all the Jews. they take that kind of talk very seriously. And the first time it was talked about and acted upon seriously was 1967, in the Seven Days War. And it was led by Egypt. But All the Arab countries virtually came in support of it. You know, the Jordanians, who finally made peace, but they were on the wrong side, the Syrians, of course. And just about all of the countries surrounding Israel were against them. They weren't necessarily, and most of them were not, Shiite, which is what the Iranian was. But they were against them from just a general, we don't like Jews in our neighborhood kind of thing. And we're bigger than they are, so we'll just push them out and kill them. Well, it didn't work. And the Jews ended up winning the war in 7 days, mostly from the Air Force doing a remarkable job. And demolishing some World War II vintage and a little bit later, Soviet tanks that weren't any match for their weapons. They didn't have to use nuclear weapons at the time. I believe they had a few themselves. They didn't use them. Okay, so we know that they took them out. And this little statement I'm going to tell you, I just heard from a fellow named Charles Krauthammer, who I think is a really great commentator and excellent psychiatrist as well. And he mentioned this fact, which I believe to be true, because it came from him, that when the Israelis went to Egypt mostly to fight their air force, which was formidable because they did have more modern than their tanks were, MiGs that were capable of staying in a dogfight with their, I think they were probably F-7s from the United States. At any rate, they sent every plane except seven. Only seven were withheld to defend themselves. They sent a couple hundred over, as far as I know, but I think that's enough, to be offensive in the fight. That is not a people who are going to hold anything back. That's the first thing you got to realize, is that they're going to fight, and they're going to fight to the death. Luckily, they won that war, because they maintained a democratic stature in the area, which was needed to hopefully keep some stability from the levels of dictators and other things that were happening long before Iran was taken over. Now, Iran was a dictatorship, too, and we supported that. And we supported the other dictators. The United States is not innocent in that situation. The Israelis did not support it as much. And they were in favor of the whole area becoming true democracy. Okay. Then what happened? Well, in 1981, the Israelis were very concerned about Saddam Hussein. He had a nuclear reactor in an Nuruk area. And this reactor was about to go online. And the super weapon he was using was better than missiles. He was making a super gun that could hit New York. It's a gun with a barrel 120, 140 feet long that could shoot nuclear mines through across the planet into outer space and come back down on that, it wouldn't be strategically as effective as a ballistic missile, which you could, you know, make sure it hits within a couple hundred foot radius, but still darn efficient and dangerous, because you could keep loading these every 30 seconds, you know, shells, nuclear shells. So the Israelis are quite concerned about that, and so was the United States. And with the United States' help and backing, they went in and took out that nuclear reactor about 6-8 weeks before it could have gone online. And that pretty much ended Saddam Hussein's attempted, successful anyway, nuclear development, although he was developing nuclear weapons again in the early 90s. But that was the last one. Okay, so what else? Well, in 1987, the Israelis attacked a nuclear plant in Syria. That, again, was within a few months of being put online. And they just took it out because it was already making weapons-grade uranium, but they wanted to make it a full plant so they can make, instead of just doing a centrifugal type of making uranium, which takes huge amounts of energy and time, if you have your own plant, you can make plutonium, which is just as good and sometimes better than a nuclear bomb, and within a few months, you can make plutonium. So, and you'd also have some weapons-grade uranium from the plant left over, too, but mostly plutonium. Okay, so, bottom line, they took them out. Now, I ask you, after giving, and there's more I think I know about this, but I don't even reveal it. With that history, why do you believe is the coming political and nuclear crisis? Okay, you don't have to be Karnak to get that one, right? Okay. So, here's the issue. There are inherent dangers in this situation. It isn't that I think that the Iranians, as crazy as they are, will be successful in wiping out Israel. I don't believe that. I think they'll be successful in annihilating themselves, which may be a good thing. I'm not talking about all the Iranians. I'm talking about the people who are fervent, extremist, radicals who believe in the whole thing I told you about. Those folks need to be gone. And they need to be gone because they're not going to stop in their fanaticism until they kill a whole bunch of people. Now, gone doesn't mean you have to kill them, but gone means they can't be empowered. If the Israelis attack, they're going to take out all the ones they know of the nuclear development sites that presently are making enough uranium to develop a reactor that then they can make plutonium and do other stuff. So ultimately, that's what they're going to. And they'll do it as effectively and efficiently as possible. They could just do that and nothing else. That would be, in my mind, stupid. But that may be one of the things they would do. That would lead to the most likely retributive attack against them by the present Iranian administration. So I wouldn't just take out their nuclear potential. I'd take out the people that are the minds, the evil minds behind that potential, and hope for a coup that comes about or some other method, democratic. We know that in June of 2009, if this country had supported such a thing, it was possible for that to have happened. We didn't support it, and it failed. So here is the bottom line. If we're the best thing they can do is to expand the attack to a level that will create a lot of angst and other issues among supporters of Iran, but may eliminate Iran as a potential enemy, which we would. But the danger of all that is that then other countries and other political units will attack them. Who are they? Well, they're the surrogates of Iran. Hezbollah, you've heard of the names. I don't want to name names, but it's probably not good. Who knows, this radio station could be bombed. I mean, the point is that the end of the situation is that it could be that one way or another, one way is that if you leave all the people in power, or if you try to take them out, they remain in power long enough to enact the foul scenario. In Lebanon, you got goons and people who are radical shooting rockets and coming over with tanks and shooting, attacking. And from Syria, yeah, pretty much the same thing. Yeah, Assad, yeah, he's a real neutral guy. Yeah, no. No, he's in favor of getting rid of Israel. And then you have, of course, the PLO and whatever. And that could end up in an attack. At least not from them, and necessarily to who's running the government right now, and you know who that is. Isn't the PLO. Not really. And so you end up with attacks from all sides. Plus we've got the Muslim Brotherhood. Egypt is trying to get power right now. Now, I might say a good or bad thing that the military is still holding the country hostage. I'm not in favor of that, really. But I think it might be better than the Muslim Brotherhood because they will also end the accord, the Camp David Accord, just by probably sending us an email, and will then attack Israel tomorrow. In my opinion, if they have control of the country, which they will if they get control of Parliament, and Parliament can say and do what it wants, which it can't. So that's a very bad thing. It's even possible that more neutral countries might join in, although I don't think so, because they don't like Iran. But you could have, just from what I just described, a very, very bad situation, because it's almost all sides of Israel being attacked, including, if Iran survives, them going through Iraq and picking up a bunch of soldiers in the process, because there's Shiites in the southern part of Iraq. Well, the other people in Iraq, well, the Sunnis, and they don't care about them. But they'll pick up, by going through southern Iraq, a lot of potential freedom fighters who are in favor of Iran. And you could have a multiple-pronged attack on Israel. Now, could Israel survive that? There's only one way I believe they could survive it. I think they already know this. Based upon other people's calculations, Israel has about 200 strategic nuclear weapons devices. It may have another 100, or who knows how many, tactical weapons that are used close to the ground against troops and tanks and that sort of stuff, and guns. And so it couldn't use, unless it wanted to destroy the countries that were attacking it, those strategic weapons very effectively, the 200. And it might have to use one or two of those weapons, I don't know, along with a lot of tactical nuclear weapons, if they even have that. These are really small nuclear bombs, like a tenth the size of bombs used on Hiroshima, or less. And they're usually shot out of guns, not out of missiles. And they can be used on the battlefield. The danger is always, though, they produce a huge amount of fallout, much more than the strategic weapons do, because they usually don't drive those into the ground. They explode them much higher above the ground, whereas the tactical weapons are only effective if you're very close to the ground, and you get a lot more nuclear fallout. As a matter of fact, the greatest danger of a tactical weapon use is not the response of the enemy, who's probably going to be killed. It's that the fallout can, through the wind running, going in the wrong direction, roll onto one's own troops, which could get them all killed or make them very sick. So there's where the problem comes. Now, this, it's all this I was leading up to this question. would the Israelis ever use a nuclear weapon? Yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt it. Because, again, it's the same existential question. Do I die? 4 million Jews in Israel die? Or do we all decide, some majority figure, that we will use whatever weapons are necessary to defend ourselves from the extinction? I think that's more likely the outcome. Now, if they use tactical weapons only, there'll be some fallout, but it won't be that severe if they only use a couple, which would be an eye-opener for sure, whoever they use it against. But if they have to use strategic weapons, that could be much worse. I believe the United States believes they're going to use strategic weapons. Why do I say that? Because the day before Panetta made his statement, they announced a premature removal of huge numbers of troops in the next few months from Afghanistan. Well, why would you want to get rid of troops from Afghanistan? Because we don't want to even have a presence there for two points. We don't want to actually come to, I think the administration does not want to come to Israel's defense. So less troops, less abilities. The most important thing is if Israel is forced to use atomic weapons, nuclear weapons, especially strategic ones, the results will be that a lot of the troops that are to the east, because the winds go from the west to the east, will be contaminated with fallout. Now, that could be just my conjecture. There could be lots of other political reasons for removing troops, all of them really not very sane ones, but maybe we do. Okay, so, ultimately, that the greatest danger to the world is for the third time in history, but the second period in history, nuclear weapons will be used in an armed offense / defense. And the results could be significant amounts of fallout. And for all of us in this country, in the United States, and everybody else in the world, that always has bad effects. Now, in addition to everything I just said, it is also possible that many other unforeseen political crises could take place in the entire Middle East. From the fact that you have this high level of nuclear violence potential and of violence in general. And this could lead to a whole other kind of change. This is 2012. There could be a lot of man-made disasters this year. Nuclear war is one of them. But beyond the nuclear war question, there also is the stability of the world economy, the closing of the Straits of Hormuz, which like a quarter of the world's oil or more goes through there. The inability to oil prices would almost double if you did that, but, which would create a worldwide depression. You see, so all of this is interconnected, and it has very serious consequences. So you got to ask yourself, why would the United States administration be giving away tactical strategies to the enemy? Well, maybe there's some belief in the Obama administration, and I can tell you there is, because there are a number of people in the administration who have openly said that they want to eliminate Israel. Openly. In books and in speeches. Open. Obama hasn't. But he said some pretty bad things. But at any rate, if they're in favor of openly eliminating Israel, well, why not tell the Iranians what's going on and all the other actors out there, get all the various surrogates ready to attack on a single notice? It sounds like perfect sense in a crazy, crazy way. Okay, let me talk about 5 minutes of why, if you're a spiritual person, you don't want to see Israel wiped off the face of the map. In every circumstance where there has been some form of genocide, it is represented by you. Everyone. I don't care if it goes back to the Romans, but it's all evil. Whether or not you like Israel, whether or not you like some of the people in the White House think that it's good, they were just gone. Whether you're the most anti-Semitic person on the planet, it's in your best interest not to give evil the wild card of destroying races, a race or races of people. Now, I'm using the word race here kind of liberally because a Jew is not truly a race. I know that you may be taught that, but they're not. Jews are a religion. But they have spent a lot of time living among themselves, so some people see them as a race. They're not. Okay. So the danger is we expand evil, and how bad is that? Real bad. That's about the most dangerous thing you could think of doing. It makes the idea of using tactical nuclear weapons or strategic, which we'll talk about later in the show, because I'm going to tell you some things you can do to help yourself and protect yourself. But it's virtually meaningless. It's really irrelevant if you're talking about expanding evil by murdering at least 4 million or more people of like kind and thought. It's just unbelievable. Now, why else? I mean, that's a good reason I just gave you. Why, if you're selfish and somewhat spiritual, it's a good idea. If you believe in evil at all, it's a good idea that you be on the side of Israel, even if you don't like Israel for various reasons. Okay, what else is the problem? What other kinds of issues are there? Well, in terms of good versus evil, the best way for human beings to presently form themselves as a political unit and to have a government is that government be a democracy with true freedom of thought, of action, of economy. Israel has that. I mean, they have it better than we do right now. And so this is another big reason, because when you get rid of the good, not only are you doing an evil thing by getting rid of the good, but you're getting rid of the spread of the good in the way the good could build on itself, which is why evil wants to do that. It sees democracies and good as its true enemy, and it wants to wipe them out. Okay. So, with that thought in mind, we're going to come back in about 2.5 minutes, and I'm going to tell you what things that we can be doing right here, us and everybody else who's listening to my voice, that we can do some things that will be helpful towards the world becoming a better place, more peaceful, more spiritual, and making it through this year. This is not going to be a good year. No. And we'll do that in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we are talking about the coming political and nuclear crises, but I'm referring to this in a more spiritual, somewhat scientific, and certainly in ways of trying to be helpful and produce some positive results out of being forewarned and maybe planning. So it's not just talking about the negative. Although the first part of the show was pretty well negative, as far as I'm concerned. But I needed to build the framework for why we would be talking about having a show on this subject right now. Hopefully, if you heard the first part of the show, you're saying, yep, certainly could be happening. That could all happen. So impossible. So what can we do? Well, anybody who is near or around a computer can start writing letters and blogging in support of the position of Israel. Now, why do I say that? Why do I want to take sides against Purim or its surrogates? The reason is for what I just finished before the break. Israel is a democratic country. It has built into it. It's a country of light. Forget about whether you like or dislike anything about Israel or Jewish people, whatever. It's a country of light because it's a democracy, and it's run for freedom. Most of the countries around it are not. And so, that's a big deal. Also, it would be an incredibly evil act if Iran, with its surrogates, killed 4 million Jews in Israel war. I'm not sure the exact numbers in that war. And other people who live there as well. It would be an outrage. And evil would be able to move and advance in this world in ways that it hasn't been for a long, long time. Our planet could turn completely evil by that single event. Now, for you out there who are Christians, biblical, you know, you're into Revelation, this and that, you might be saying, well, yeah, that's what's happening. This is the big deal, and the war is going to come, and, you know, it's going to be the whole thing. Well, that's possible, too. The main thing that's happening is the third ray is going out. And this is no minor issue. People, in the use of their throat chakra, who are selfish, and particularly who are dark and evil, are becoming more and more rigid and more selfish in the use of that chakra, in that sense, which includes the use of speech and communication. So propaganda is becoming the means of the world in spin. And also military action is becoming much more prevalent because it's controlled by the third way as well. And so is big banking and economies. Wow. Sound familiar? Also, if you're concerned about the economic future of the world, including the United States, this whole thing, as I said, could spill over to a tremendously disastrous world economy in which a full-blown depression comes out of the war that might ensue between Iran and its surrogates in Israel. You won't be able to get any oil out of that region. Even the Saudis won't be able to get their oil out. Now we're talking about maybe half of the world's supply could be affected at some point, quadrupling and more the price of oil. I mean, we could actually see the price of a gallon of gas to be $20, up to $20, or more. This is what we're facing. And so, what is the solution? Well, first, I recommend, as I have in prior shows, that people have 6 months, or if you can afford it, a year or more, of food and water. Why? Because in these kinds of crises, that also may produce a panic in the country you're in, especially if you're in the United States, people will buy things they don't even need because, or get, take them if they have to, because they think there will be a shortage. That's the worst thing that happens. It's sort of as bad as the reality that there is one, but there may not be a shortage, but it will create one by being suddenly a hoarder within minutes, hours, days at most. I'm not suggesting that everybody do this immediately because I know they won't anyway. So over months of time, it won't have much of effect. But if you did it in days of time or a day, it have a devastating effect. Stocking up is good now. Once the crisis hits, it's going to create an even worse problem. So, yeah, I suggest planning for that. If you can get your hands on them, there are some types of gas masks that are also good for filtering out nuclear particles from fallout. Nice to have those with a few extra canisters for each person. Why? Well, they last like 10 hours. And let me give you the reality of nuclear fallout. The winds go from west to east. Any kind of nuclear exchange in the Near East will take several days to reach parts of the United States. Hawaii and far-off places may get it before, but most of the United States, you know, 3 to 7 days is going to take time for stuff to, in the upper atmosphere to get to us. And the western parts of the United States will get it worse than the eastern parts because depending upon the amount of fallout, more will fall earlier than later, in most cases. Now, some will get very high in the atmosphere and may circle the Earth 10 times before it comes down. That's a different thing. I'm talking about the nearer fallout. If there were a very, very strong nuclear response on the part of Israel because of the most unbelievably threatening events to it, and they were to use a lot of their strategic and maybe all of their tactical nuclear weapons if they have them, the result would be that we could see 3 to 5 rads within a week in the western parts of the United States per hour. 3 to 5 rads per hour. That's very, very bad because that would shorten people's lives tremendously. Now, if you stayed inside and did not go outside, it could be a tenth that. Especially if you keep your house pretty tight as far as the air filtration. And depending upon the structure and a lot of other things. If you stay in like a fallout shelter, it may be 1/100 or less of that. I'm not suggesting everybody digs fallout shelters like in the 50s, you know. But what I am saying is that it would be worthwhile to keep some things on hand. It's nice to have some of the potassium iodide, which has damaging effects on taking it in your body. But if you're exposed to rads, literally, of a fallout, I would take it in an iron plate. Because the first part that gets cancerous in your body is the thyroid and parathyroid. And those glands are somewhat protected by the potassium iodide. So the whole body is a little bit. Although, like I said, there's reasons not to take this stuff. So you wouldn't want to take it unless you really thought it was important to take it, you know, like imminent danger. And you can take it even a few hours after exposure. It can still help. So having that stuff around is worthwhile. It's not very expensive. You can buy it on the internet and other places. The gas mask is important because the most dangerous type of fallout is the type you breathe in, not the type that falls on your skin. So if you can stop most of that from happening, like when you do have to go outside, you could wear one of these gas masks that protect from nuclear particles, you'd be a lot safer. There's only about a week window when the highest elevations of fallout will take place. Fallout will be dangerous for 3 or 4 weeks if it got really high. And there will be residual fallout for months, maybe even years after that. But you can do things to try to limit this. It's very simple stuff. Have means and ways of sealing off your apartment or home in whatever ways you can afford, and it's even reasonable, that you could do in a couple hours to a couple days. You can't spend all your time just doing that and not doing other things that might be important. Water is more important than food. You can live without food for weeks. Water, you can't live without food for more than a few days. So you've got to have water on hand, and I suggest large amounts, because there may be no water. You never know. Although I don't think we're going to be under attack directly, so I think our water and sewage systems and everything else will probably still be working. But it would be good to have some water available. You never know. Also, some areas where there is water collection, if there's fallout, could be the water itself could become contaminated. And the second most dangerous thing you can do is to eat or drink radioactive fallout. Not, again, getting on your skin is nowhere near as bad as that, but the worst thing is to breathe it. So you can see that trying to eliminate those sources is a good thing to stay alive. If there was any significant amount of radioactive fallout created from this political or nuclear crisis. What else can we do? Well, one of the things I would suggest is to encourage all of the governments, including ours, the United States government, to do everything they can to prevent Israel from being attacked if, assuming Israel attacks first, preemptively, because they have done so before, and they will do it. The present administration in this government in the United States, and possibly others following us, unfortunately, will use this as an excuse that Israel should not have done a preemptive strike, and therefore we're not going to support them. That will lead to all the bad things that I talked about suddenly become much more possible. You can see why. It encourages Iran and its surrogates. They say, well, if the United States is going to help them, let's go for it, yeah. That's even after they've been attacked. So, not just the United States. If you are in a foreign country that is friendly to Israel, do the same thing. Because they're going to need every friend they can get in terms of pushing back what will become a potential onslaught from all of the surrogates plus Iran. And that would be a very bad thing. And then we got the evil being developed at a much greater rate because you're talking about genocide. Now, I'm not in favor of killing a lot of Iranians. If it's possible, I would just like to get rid of the maybe few tens of thousands to 100,000 or whatever it is, really bad dudes who want to do all these terrible things. It's a small proportion of the population. The Iranians are well-educated people who were used to freedom, even though they had a Shah who took power with the help of the United States in the 50s. And it was just a blatant takeover. It was ridiculous. Our CIA thought that it was likely or possible that communists would take over the government, so we installed, after a legitimate election where some communists were voted in, but not a majority, we installed a dictator rather than have some communists in the parliament. Now, this is during the Joe McCarthy and the super big problems, so it's somewhat understandable. It was very wrong. And it created the evil that is Iran today. They wouldn't have had a coup in 79. Khomeini and all that. I mean, the whole thing would not have taken place if they had a democracy, which is what they had until we took it away from them. And then, you know, we owe them one hell of an apology, to say the least, but we're paying the karma for it. I want you to understand something. It isn't just that we need to defend Israel. We have terrible karma here. And if something bad will come out of this, besides just the fact that some people get killed because the Israelis take action and vice versa, maybe, it's going to happen to us in a way which will be strange, but terrible. And strange might be, give you an example, a lot of tactical weapons are used. Suddenly there's a big inversion of weather at the same time, and instead of most of the fallout staying lower levels of in the atmosphere, they go up to like 100,000 feet or more, and they circle the Earth, and then another inversion, strange inversion, happens just as all this stuff is approaching the United States, maybe the third time around for all we know, or fourth time, or whatever, and it all gets dumped on the United States. That would be one of those karmic moments, like, whoa, how did that happen? It would be terrible because we could have lethal levels of radiation, and it would certainly shorten the lives of almost everybody in the country, which always reduces the effectiveness of a country to lead and be prosperous. All right. What else can you do? Well, the most important thing also is you have a means of getting any fall off of you. So have loose-fitting clothes that you can get the stuff off. You can buy suits on the Internet that work pretty good. They're kind of like raincoats, but they work okay. You can wear a raincoat for that, man. And several layers of raincoats are fairly effective to keep most of the radioactive fall off of you. But remember, breathing is the worst, eating and drinking is the next worst. Then it's the stuff you get on your skin that's, you know, the least worst in a sense. All right, so I would suggest having those things available because it'll be almost impossible to stay indoors all the time. People are going to have to leave the house in a few weeks of time. And if things got really bad fallout-wise for the United States, possibly because of a karmic reason, honestly, karmic reason could be here, then those people who have planned will outlive those who don't, because they'll be able to heed the karma coming and change it in some ways, at least for themselves and those who will listen to it, in a better way. So those are things that I think everybody has a way of doing. You can tell more people about what I'm talking about. I don't even know how much percentage of the country knows what Panetta did. I people are asleep. You know, it's not necessarily going to be on every news channel all the time, and that's bad. Good. So, another thing that would be helpful is educate yourself about this subject. Learn about nuclear fallout. Learn about economic collapse and depressions and what you can do with them. Recognize that some things that seem valuable today will be worthless in the future. and vice versa. The most valuable things will sustain life in a direct way. Food, shelter, clothing, water. The things that won't are the things that have no direct means of sustaining life on a daily basis. Those things, as valuable as you may think them to be, they become wholly worthless. All right, so this is, you need to take inventory of what you've got as a resource and how you can use it best with this potential coming nuclear crisis and political crisis. Now, the other thing that could happen is people like the present administration in this country could claim martial law and their meaning to seize power because so many things are going wrong. There's terrible nuclear fallout and everything else. We can't have elections. People going out and getting poisoned, we will have to postpone them or something. That is very, very dangerous. Extremely dangerous. Because the loss of freedom is more dangerous than any other loss you can have. Freedom is the first part of God's mind. It's literally what helps to create life. Loss of freedom destroys life. And complete loss of freedom is death. Always is a result of death. Okay, so looking at it from that standpoint now, in a metaphysical sense, we have a lot to bear in this situation. So don't be surprised if the brunt, even though they're all the way on the other side of the world as far as we're concerned, if the brunt of this doesn't have some serious impact on the United States. I'm just saying, don't plan for the worst of that potential. Even though you think they're very far away, you know, they're 9 hours, 10 hours, whatever, behind us or ahead of us, maybe nine. And this is what we have to consider. The other things that are fairly important, although maybe not as directly important, is to possibly get a little politically involved. Because just sending an email or writing, you may not be able to have enough of an impact on the system. And we need to have one heck of an impact, because we're talking about a potential attack on Iran in 30 days or less. So I would suggest, if you're a Democrat, yes, you could stay with the Democrats and try to convince them to change. But remember, the present administration is a part of the problem. It isn't part of the solution. So even if you're a Democrat, you might want to take a deep breath and swallow and get together with some independents and Republicans to form a coalition of thought about a policy that deals with Israel based upon the things that I've explained so far. That could be very helpful because it puts it in the face of the politicians who are making the terrible mistakes. Obama can't do any of this alone. He has to have people backing him up. Remember that. It's just the way of the world. You can't run things, even if you're the worst dictator. Adolf Hitler could never have done the things he did. If he didn't have seven other crazy guys like him running 7 million people who are all listening, and behaving as a part of the Nazi Party. And that's how it works. One guy screaming crazy things, not going to go. Even if he's the most vile, evil person. But you get all the others to help. And then it becomes an abomination. Yeah. I guess that was a pun intended. So, you see, Here's where we're at. If we can manage to get through this year, things will start getting better. I don't even know. They may not get better if we continue on with the present administration, but let's assume that we're going to get better. Some way, somehow. Things will get better on their own. But not so much better that the things that are going to happen this year are going to have an effect for another 10 years. That's our problem. If we go into a worldwide depression, we won't get out of it just because we're not in 2012 anymore. No. Certainly the fourth wave will be coming in stronger. People will become more reflective, hear each other better, communicate better. Everything's going to get way better. But if we're in a worldwide depression and we're trying to stay alive with gas masks and crazy stuff about fallout masks and other stuff, then don't think that this will solve the problem. Now, what if you have a at least fiscally responsible person in office as president that has majority of the House and the Senate? Well, then you got a whole different deal. Better chance, much better chance, that we as a lead country will keep the world from either going into depression or from falling apart due to the expansion of evil. We will be able to do that if we can save ourselves first. If Obama's reelected, it ain't going to happen. That's my opinion. And then you can kiss the country, the world, the whole thing goodbye. Now, you may not believe me, and you might think that it's impossible. I just got finished with Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged. I want to pick that, but it's quite a read. It's a long, I mean, it's like almost 1,100 pages. But it's a great book because she's trying to show how a country becomes led by a dictatorship, in effect, and does away with the Constitution. I mean, it's really interesting. It's the United States in a future sense, although it was written in 57. So it was written during the 50s, I should say. It was published in 57. And it's amazingly reflective of our situation. So I do recommend that as an interesting read. The other things we need to be concerned about are more or less side issues, but fairly important. And some of the side issues will have to do with the ongoing future of our relationship with states in the Middle East, including Israel. And the best thing we can do to deal with that is to develop our own sources of oil and to use the sources of oil in this hemisphere, and particularly from Mexico and Canada. Now, you know, there's a pipeline that's not working very well in getting through Congress because the president's against it. He seems to be against everything that might save the country. Why would it be important to get more oil? Because by relieving the issue of oil, we no longer have to balance our needs for oil, from the Middle East in particular, with our consciences and the need for freedom and justice and goodness. And that's probably the most important element, for, as far as I'm concerned, about the way this country is acting in ill ways about the whole circumstance. So it would be really good to develop the sources of oil. They are waiting. There's many ways. We could be swimming in oil if we wanted to. We could lower the price of oil, no kidding, to 50 cents a gallon. Yeah, it could be 50 cents a gallon. But you have to get rid of some of the taxes, which presently are more than that in most places. But you could have very, very inexpensive oil and gasoline, of course. Now, you could say, well, but what about the world, you know, the global warming and this and that, do we really want to have all that oil? Well, we're going to use it anyway. I'd rather be from our backyard than from Akademijad's backyard. Wouldn't you? I mean, doesn't that make sense? And the development of almost all of it does not have any impact on the environment. Really. The reason we had a catastrophe with the well in the Gulf is because we made rules that the wells couldn't be dug in safer, shallower waters. So we forced them to go way out into the ocean, where it was much more likely something bad would happen. Now, I'm not saying it's always safe. There's no such thing as safe. If you want to be safe, the only safe thing you can do is be dead. You want to live, it ain't safe. But there are reasonable risks with less bad consequences than things we're doing now, which is to limit our sources of energy. The next thing I would suggest is develop all the gas. Yeah. We can convert most of our trucking over to gas. Theoretically, we could even convert new trains over to it. And if you use the gas for generating electricity a bit more, that would use all of the gas we have on an ongoing basis. And it would lower our consumption of oil by about 50%. Well, that takes us almost to the point where we're at right now as far as how much oil we have. So we could almost solve the problem with just gas alone, although it's less practical in some circumstances. What about alternative energy? You know, I'm in favor of alternative energy. You've heard me say so. But the problem is that even if we quadrupled the amount of alternative energy on the planet, the total amount of energy used alternatively would be less than 1% for the whole world. It may be only 2% in the United States. So the results are crazy. I mean, you can't say, well, let's just stop using oil or gas or any fuel. And coal is the worst. But there are ways probably to deal with coal, except we haven't tried enough. And for right now, we shouldn't get rid of coal because we'd be really bad shape. Half of our electricity comes from coal. Just cut your electric bill in half and see how you live. Yeah. Cut the energy, I should say, in half. See how you live. Okay, so these things, which are relatively conservative ideas, make a lot of sense. And they would lower the cause for there being a nuclear crisis and a political crisis as well, especially in the Middle East. What else can we do? Well, people keep saying, let's put sanctions on Iran. More and more sanctions. Won't stop anything. It is probably the craziest thing on the planet to consider that in some way we can seriously hurt a country that has as much oil as Iran has. And they can't trade with two or three other countries that they were used to trading. But it turns out that the Chinese and the Soviets, well, not the Soviets, the Russians now, will take all the oil that Iran wants to sell and more. So we can't win that way. You see, there's just virtually no way in this world to have true, effective sanctions in an economic sense. Sure, we can take billions of dollars out of banks, which we're doing, stealing it from them, which is okay, I say it's fine. But they cost us at least $250 billion by supporting the Shiites in Iraq and by supporting basically a anti-American movement, which then became the IEDs and other terrible weapons that were used from 2004 on. Yeah, we won the war more or less, but we lost peace. We lost the rebellion. So, with that in mind, we need to be very cognizant of taking proactive measures and supporting those who do as well, like Israel, because that's the only thing that's going to stop this. You can't stop a fanatic with some threat of economic reprisal. They don't care about their economics. They really don't. They want to kill you, and that's it. And when you're dead, they'll take what you got anyway, so they're not too worried about you, cutting off their cotton shipments so they can't have cooler clothes in the summertime. I mean, it doesn't mean anything to them. Especially it doesn't mean anything to the regime. Now, are there people in the country that it affects terribly and would they like to see their government acting differently? Yeah, sure. But the government isn't for or by the people. It's government against and in destruction of the people. They don't really care about people. Remember, they're evil. So sanctions really don't work because you're dealing with evil, and it doesn't care. It's an irrelevant. You have to be more rational. You have to have more reasons than a fervor, which you call religion, but it's an evil kind of form of religion, as your motive. If those are your motives, you're untouchable. That won't make any difference. If we close everyone in our bank accounts, if we block 90% of all their imports, and even block most of their oil exports, it still will not change the results. That's scary, because you can only change the results, therefore, through active, destructive war. All right, so we've got some serious things to consider here. And I hope I'm not making it sound too terrible, because I'm talking about things we can do good now to make changes. Another change that we can do is to debug Islam. We, in a politically correct sense, and somewhat based upon our feelings through our Declaration of Independence and Constitution, we believe we should never attack another's religion. But if the religion is a representative of evil, it's not really religion. It's another Kanye. Similar to, we're just building nuclear facilities so we can have cheaper light or more light bulbs and more electricity. Totally nuts. Here, you got to really push the envelope. Because the present circumstances really don't give us a lot of options, and we're in a tremendous pickle. So if we really want to head this thing off, the next 30 days are critical for contacting people about this issue. On a broader sense, laying out foundations that are better than the present crazies of all parties in this country, by the way. Nobody has a coherent, really good plan for dealing with this, because they think that it's an either-or, and it's inevitable that they're going to get nuclear weapons. They're going to go on and on. But the reality is, it's fear. They're just afraid. So you've got to relinquish your fears and accept the responsibility of trying to do your very best to change the situation. The best thing that could be done would be to encourage the Iranian people to consider, as early as possible, another coup, or not coup, another takeover through, hopefully, the destruction of the dictatorship and the increase in democratic principles and behaviors. We could encourage them, maybe if everybody sort of had to adopt a friend in Iran kind of thing. I don't know how you do that. But something on that order might actually be helpful. Because the Iranians, just like the Israelis, need to know they're not alone. But in the sense that we're not going to support their government to go in and kill Jews or anybody else. But we're going to support them to have a free democratic society where if they want to practice this radical Shiite type of Islam, they theoretically can, although it may be disrespected as a religion. Because again, I state that something is not a religion when God tells you, through that religion, to go kill, mass kill especially, people, kill anybody for that matter. That's not religion, okay? And so, when we're dealing with these kinds of issues, we have to be bold. And I don't even know how you can be any... You can't even go over the top on this one. When the Secretary of Defense says, well, they're really probably going to attack in March now. Well, March is 30 days away. We should all be considering doing something to do something about what we're going to do, and try to get our government to be much more responsive to understanding the most basic things about politics instead of being ideologically socialist and communist and being in favor of rebellion and even so-called murder, genocide. Okay, let me take a little break, just a tiny break here. Just mention that Phi Chi Jizik is on sale, in case you don't know it. You may not have heard of us. We're selling it for $30 a bottle in the hundreds. Yeah, for real. And that's a good deal. And the little bottle, I think, is that went down to like $12. But it's a really good deal because you still can return it if it doesn't work for you. And it's not going to work for everybody. And if it does work for you, it's really affordable. It could replace the cost of some medicine and actually be cheaper to use than the medicine. It has many great qualities to it. I've tried some anti-inflammatories recently. I was told about. They're sort of competing products. They work quite differently than the 5-GG6. You only have to take one or two pills. What I found is that I didn't notice much difference. Whereas when I take the G-Sick, I notice the radical difference. Now, so one of the people who told me about this product had the exact opposite reaction. I said, well, let's go with the other one. Although the other one's still very expensive. But I said, still go with that one. You know, if G-Sick is going to work for you, use the one for sure that is. And it's not surprising. Because G-Sick is working on science. When people have certain imbalances, that won't work, especially if they're smokers. I mean, I tell you right now, that's kind of an anti-cell on G-Sick, but if you're a smoker, it's not going to work as well. And so the point is, and when we were developing G-Sick, I said that over the air, by the way. And the thing is that when you look at the way other things work, they aren't so much based upon the science as I've described it in other shows, and so I'm not going to go into Phi Chi. They work more by relieving only certain centers that are contaminated, and that's it. They don't move the energy that much. Chi is not moving that much. They work well on people who have specific dogmatic problems that are chronic, and they don't have an easy time moving energy in their body for various reasons. Could be some other illnesses, concomitantly, whatever. And the problem is that G-Sick, you might have to take for several weeks before you would get a result. Whereas this other product, getting a minimal result immediately for a lot of people is the thing that sells them, not necessarily saying, well, I don't want to try this thing for that much time. But if you buy a bottle of 100, you can use all 100 of them and see over a period of time, is it good or not? And if it doesn't, you still get your money back. Think about that. Okay, let's get back to the question of political and nuclear crises. And it's 2012, oh my, oh my. The other elements that we can be doing to help ourselves in this coming political nuclear crisis is to not compel the crises in any shape or form by living in selfish ways. What do I mean by that? I believe that people should be free to work for themselves, to make money. I believe in a totally free market economy. I believe in any collective or socialistic economic sense because it always leads to slavery and destruction. But this part, I also believe that there should be sufficient charity to make sure that people who do not have enough to sustain their lives and who in some way are suffering from that and who want to be helped can receive charitable help. I even believe it can come from the government sometimes. But the point is that the reason I put it is because we, while we are doing great things in our creative life, need to help others so they can do the same. and they can then pay it forward, so to speak. And if we make ourselves isolated and maybe collectively only live with other people who are successful and happy, we may ignore an important part of God. What is that part? What is a poor person? What is a person who's destitute? What is a person who's lost their house and their job and their living and all the money they might have? Those people are people who have suffered from some karmic issues. So you can't say, well, God did it to them. No, they did it to themselves. But it was at an earlier time when we weren't there to see. And although it's karmic, we still have the responsibility to help those people to change it from negative karma to positive. That's our responsibility. And charity is part of it. Education, helping others to become educated is another part. Recognizing the validity and change in existence that a reincarnation makes. And realize that there are many intricacies to it. This changes us so that we are more spiritual, and the more you do that, even on an individual level, the less the coming political and nuclear crises and other problems of this year will stick. They may happen, but they won't turn out to be as bad, anywhere near as bad, as they might have. So part of your service is to love or give to others in the best, most wise way possible, not give them what they need or want, but give them what they need as a soul first. The souls always need so they can be of service to others. That's the way you want to give to them. Now, you could say, well, what if there's a family? Can't I give to them in a familiar way? Yeah. But it isn't as effective. And it won't be as high a standing of giving, nor may it be, it may not be wise to. It may be family, but really wretched, selfish people. And the more you give them, the more selfish they become. Well, that's not a good idea. You see. So, what I'm suggesting here is balancing the giving so that the people that are given to are grateful. If there's no gratitude, stop giving. They also must be willing to do the same for others in some way that is both physical or material and applicable to others. They're willing to do that, that's great. They say, well, I'm helping everybody because I'm going to sit in my room and meditate for an hour every week. No. That's not service. Service involves all three parts of God's mind, and there's no action or interaction taking place. It's a lack of action. You may be building your consciousness in some ways, but you may be lowering it even in worse ways by not putting it into action. Of course, if you use evil and bad things to put it into action, you're not going to get ahead either. That's going to be very destructive. I'm talking about doing it in ways that are effective towards the good of us. Will that offset the problems in Iran? Probably not. Not the one thing. But if we do a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about, collectively, even potentially as spiritual groups together, the result is that it could make changes significantly. And remember, when I talk about spiritual group, the people may not even know they're in a spiritual group. They may be just a group of people that have a certain virtuous way of functioning, and that's what they do together, and they like doing that. That's great. That's a spiritual group. Yeah, and spiritual groups that claim to be spiritual groups oftentimes are not because they aren't doing anything to change anything. And so, you know, they may sit around and maybe hold hands, sing Kumbaya, and meditate, maybe pray. But those kinds of things do not bring about the changes we need to happen in very near future. Please let other people know, I'm saying, reminding you again about this, of what this show is about. because lots of people don't know it. And time is too short for them to find out. You know, our news is not well covered. I mean, there's a lot of news. It's repetitious of a certain stream of thought, and therefore it doesn't keep people open-minded. And that's not good. Okay, so another part of this whole package, so to speak, is if we can get an uprising in Iran started, and then Israel were to attack, but limited it to the least amount of people being harmed who are innocent, and made it mostly about the bad guy, Iran would find that Israel was its, the people who take over Iran, would find that Israel is not bad towards them, that the government was doing terrible things, and the people would come over much more easily. The worst thing that could happen, though, is that Iran will start a ground war, air war, and many people who are just in their military will be killed. And that will create a backlash among the general population that Israel will be their enemy. Even though they were provoked and everything else, that won't matter. That's why I'm not that much in favor of this expanding, but there's nothing we may be able to do to stop. We should try to limit it as best as we possibly can. And our government, the United States government, could actually make a big change in it. We're giving away their strategic plans. I mean, it's just nuts. I mean, there's things the government could be doing right now, and we make a major change. We're not doing it. I'm ashamed right now about the way our government is responding to so many things and the harm we're causing to many others who don't live here. But we have a profound effect on the world. And I'm afraid that this is going to be one of the worst times for that to occur. And remember, there's no guarantee that this isn't going to turn out to be pure genocide. And Israel will cease to exist. And what that really means in terms of evil and everything else, that could be some of the worst outcomes imaginable. We need to educate our children and particularly adolescents. This is not a subject you can talk very easily with someone who has not reached adolescence, because it's nuanced in so many details and issues. But we can talk to our older children fairly easily about the things that I've said tonight in the show. Why is it important for them to know? They can't do any more than we might for adults. Because they're going to live through this, and they need to have an open mind and open eyes as these potential things come true. Because there's no more ingrainment into young people than when something of this nature is actually happening. And if you really want your children to be open-minded and to be pro-democracy, pro-freedom, loving others, you need to take the time to educate them now, because this is when they're going to learn all, while things are taking place. And if that doesn't take place, then it'll be easier for a terrible administration to get in, as we have one right now, in my opinion, to do even worse things. Because nobody's going to mind the story. You have to come to this on your own opinion, your own cognizance, on the ability to realize that this is evil, and this is what these folks are really trying to do, and we need to be on the side of good, even if we disagree with some of the opinions of the other side or whatever. And if you live that way, your children will pick it up. Maybe they can even participate. Maybe they can blog something or tell their friends. We as a nation, the United States, and other nations like us, need to put our foot down against this kind of unbelievable terroristic tyranny that comes from the adoption of a vile part of a religion. That's the problem we're dealing with. And it's a biggie. Getting worse. Okay, so in terms of protecting your family and friends, I would also suggest that you look into a product called Prodex. You can buy it over the internet. If you wrap your windows in it, not only is it an excellent insulator, it'll block probably 95% of the energy coming through the windows if there's any kind of fallout at all. And it's easy to wrap windows in it. You can just put one layer on. You literally wrap your whole house in it if you want. And you can use that kind of material, products, in that way to achieve excellent results. It has aluminum in a vacuum state put onto some foam. And the aluminum, the way aluminum reacts, it's a little foil of sorts, heavy-duty kind, is that it will stop all alpha particles, it will stop some of the beta particles and none of the gamma particles. Well, gamma particles are the most dangerous, but they're few and far between, whereas alpha particles, like after a big nuclear exchange, are everywhere. And beta particles are sort of in between it. So you can knock out a large part of any kind of pollution that way. Also protect your water and food. Because if you don't protect water and food, and it becomes contaminated, eating and drinking will be life-threatening, worse than just walking outside. Remember that. Get huge amounts of protein that can last, because there may be no refrigerators for a while, or ways of keeping things cold or frozen. Do not rely upon your freezer. Instead, get canned things in freeze-dried and dried forms of protein. That's what's going to be mostly missing. And have like a six-month supply of that if you can afford it. Or even a year. Because we could be in problems with this coming thing for that longer period of time. Also count on one extra person, at least, being a member of your quote-unquote group family, whatever you want to call it, that you're trying to have enough food for, because you inevitably will end up having someone, at least one person, who you're going to need to take care of. You'll see. And you don't want to leave that person alive or being left out. Treat everybody as a family in some respects, because the world could get very small very quickly with this sort of coming factor. Join groups that are not anti-war. An anti-war group will bring about the worst kind of war in this coming scenario that may happen in the next month or two. I've already described how that could happen. The problem here is an anti-war group is an insanity, because you got to get rid of evil before you can get rid of war, because evil uses wars to get rid of the rest of us. So, and evil is not going to become part of an anti-war group other than to encourage anti-war groups to not fight them. If you understand what I just said. Join groups that are wise, that understand the reality and the truth of what is happening. If you want to be more effective through group action, which can be more effective, start your own. That's fine. Do it. The next few weeks, stay particularly prone to watching the news. And watch a neutral news station if you can, because a lot of them are very pro-Obama, and they're not going to say the truth about what's really happening before you can turn around. There could be a war. And you would never even know it was coming. So please stay informed and be open-minded. And if you see people not being open-minded, well, turn the station or whatever. You know. This is the point that needs to be expressed, though. For the next month or two, if we can make it fit to 2 months, we need to know exactly what's happening in the world, because nobody's going to knock on your door and say, well, there's going to be a nuclear exchange tomorrow, and by the way, have you bought your food? Or have you done some other thing that would be, in some way, of some value? Another thing that you can do is you can maybe extend this to beyond just your family, to like a block that you live on, or a certain loosely associated group, like could be a church group, could be a school or classroom group of people. And that will be more effective, because then you can try to protest and stop the problems that are creating this at the same time. And I'm not saying being anti-war. I'm saying, because we're really talking about parental strike here on the part of Israel. But it's important, it is important that we end up with a, we'll say, a informed population who is not being fed a bunch of stuff to create illusion. Illusion in a situation like this can easily be fatal. Let me give an example. Let's say there's some of you listening to my voice tonight and saying, oh, that guy's crazy. What are you talking about? Preemptive bullshit. You know that. Crazy. Preemptive nonsense. Israel's not going to do anything. They're going to listen to the United States. They're going to do whatever the United States says. And the United States obviously doesn't want them to do anything. So why am I going to listen to this nonsense? Well, I gave you rational ideas to think about. They may not fit your belief structure, but it still doesn't hurt to do some of the things I'm suggesting, because even if I'm wrong and there's no problem, what does it really cost you? What does it really harm? You still can eat food and drink the water, right? And you can hopefully use some of the clothes you might get, maybe not all of them. And having communicated with other people about this, you may have expanded your consciousness and helped them to do the same. And if I am right, you may have saved the lives of lots of people too. So those are the reasons, that is the rationale for, so to speak, getting on board. Even better to form or use groups that you know you're part of and see if that will work for you. If we continue down the course that we are on, if it doesn't happen this spring, it's inevitable that it will happen anyway, but with varying levels of results. If Iran gets a nuclear weapon, and because Israel didn't attack them, they will use the nuclear weapon sooner or later on Israel. Israel will then most likely severely overreact, and Iran will cease to exist as even a graveyard. There will be nothing. It will look like the moon. And that will result in some of the worst fallout issues. That will result in the virtual shutting down of the worldwide economy. And at the same time, it will produce a backlash against Israel that still might end up in its own destruction. So this is the worst scenario is to do nothing and for Israel to do nothing. That's the worst scenario. That's the real nightmare. If they preempt the situation, fine. If they don't, go down. Now, I know that this country does not support what I'm saying. How do I know that? Well, because the Secretary of Defense is defeating the arguments I'm saying by his revealing of information. It's very important for each person to decide for themselves what's right and what's wrong. I believe it's wrong to support evil, wrong to help others support it, and it's also wrong to enslave anyone, to produce a circumstance in which people cannot reach their potential, do not have the freedom of thought, freedom to do what they believe is right, provided that it is not harming others. That's where I'm coming from, and that's what I support. Those things are totally the antithesis of the Iranian government today and their circuits in the countries surrounding Israel. Even if you disagree with everything I've said, consider the results. If there's no preemptive action taken, and if Iran gets 20, 30, 50 deliverable through missiles and possibly otherwise nuclear bombs, picture that world and tell me if that's the inevitable outcome of doing nothing, then what is, how could anything really be worse than that? If you can answer that question honestly, then I think you'll go along with what I've said, even though you may not believe it, because the alternatives are so terrible. Iran has not just threatened that they intend on wiping Israel off the map. Be aware that there have been numbers, huge numbers of speeches made by the mullahs and their president, etc., that their intention is to destroy the leading countries in the West, and particularly the United States. No different than Al-Qaeda or any of the other terrorist organizations, which aren't countries. But this is being done on a country-level basis, which is wealthy enough and strong enough to develop its own nuclear arsenal and to use it in a deliverable fashion that could do untold amounts of destruction. 30 nuclear warheads that were aimed at the United States. We have almost no anti-missile protection, by the way. It was done away with the first year that Obama took office. But not to say it was working at that point, but it was at least under development. And if you took 30 strategic strikes against the United States, you could put us back 200 years. We would be living like 200 years ago for the next 20 years. Not only would we not be a lead country, we barely would be a country at all. And this is a terrible thing to consider. If you're listening to me and you're in the United States, this should be the most frightening thing you could hear, possibly. Now, some of you are going to say, well, if they can reach the United States, they'll just be able to reach the eastern cities. Okay. One of those eastern cities is called Washington, D.C., so that's going to go away. Which ones else will we take away? Well, how about Miami? You know, that's an easy one. Easy to get to from there. Over there, huh? Much easier than other places. Oh, and we might as well just go up the coast, you know? Take care of all the cities that are on the coast. From, New York, maybe a few other kinds of strategic, we'll say, functionally needed things, such as major power stations or a dam or two. You know, the possibilities are endless. And the destruction is vast. It's hard for us to even imagine one nuclear bomb. Imagine dozens of them. Can't even hold in your head the amount of destruction. If you think that this is a subject that needs further development, discussion, then I would suggest that in the next weeks you put together whatever you can and let the group that I'm a member of, let us know about it. I'd like to know what people are doing. You can reach them at Ageless Wisdom Distributors. And what does that name mean? It means a group of people who are attempting to distribute virtue, which is Ageless Wisdom Virtue, kind of a common name. And instead of calling it Distributors of Virtue, we just call it Ageless Wisdom Distributors. And we would like to know if and what others are thinking about this and what they might do about it. And if you have other solutions for people to be doing, you can let us know. We'll put it up on our website. And maybe we can do the same for other people's websites if they have something that we can put up. But I think that we need to, like, blanket the airways, the various parts of the Internet, so that people are aware that this is happening, because my greatest fear is that all this takes place and 99% of the world didn't know it was even coming. And that could really be the worst possible thing, because nobody's prepared for anything, including governments, including people who are supposed to be keeping us safe and protecting us. They have no idea what's happening. I think there are some governments like that. Most of them I don't believe are, but just the fact that the public is asleep is frightening enough. Also, if anyone has any other thoughts or ideas that modify or change what I have predicted as possible outcomes, I'd like to know about those too. This is a tremendous number of potential things that could happen, and you can't really figure them all out in just one session of thinking about it. There's a whole bunch of various complicated problems that can come out of this particular circumstance right now. Well, anyway, we are out of time here, and I hope this show wasn't all negative. I hope it gave people something to think about. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.